And it's time once again for Movie Mastery. It's the podcast where we watch the movies you recommend. I am your host, John. Over there is your other host, Jeff.
Hey there.
And we together have watched a movie.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And someone else watched about 5 minutes of it with us, too.
Oh, yeah. We had our friend Brian over, yeah. And he sat through, I'm going to say maybe 20.
Almost probably about 20 minutes of it. He missed some of the real wild stuff.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you kind of get it just in the beginning of the movie. But we watched Hard Ticket to Hawaii.
It's a hard ticket to Hawaii.
It's a hard ticket to Hawaii.
Man, they sure tried to work that title into that song.
Whoever. It was real rough trying to get that to fit to a beat.
Yeah. Well, good on them for trying, though.
Yeah. We've got... Hard Ticket to Hawaii is a like one of those old boob romp films.
Yeah, they don't make these anymore because it's much easier to just get boobs on the internet if you want.
Yeah, but no one's really like, oh, I'm suffering for finding boobs and I don't want the, you know, public to think that I'm some kind of sex pervert by going into a sex store.
Yeah, so I'll just see what's on late night Cinemax, and this is the kind of movie that would be. Now, if you're curious which type of late night boob movie this is, there's usually a good three or four kinds, and this is the or theoretically an action adventure and also boob movie,
yeah,
as opposed to the theoretically a comedy but really boob movie, or the theoretically a creepy like stalker romance but actually a boob movie.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Or the horror that's actually a boob movie.
Yeah.
There's a lot of boob movies get into a lot of genres.
Yeah. I mean there's even sports but actually a boob movie.
Yeah.
So there's
a breast of their own.
I'm kind
of
sad that there are certain categories that don't show up in that very often. Like I'd like to see a Western that's actually a boob movie.
I'm sure that exists.
Or a documentary that's actually a boob movie.
Just a documentary about boob
it's
movies.
It's called The Boob. And it's just basically, you think it's going to be all interesting about, like, breast cancer and, like, the history of breasts throughout the ages. And instead, it's just some big-titted woman comes out and goes, here's my boobs. And then they just cut to another one.
Nah, man, I want a documentary of boob movies and, like, the rise and fall.
I mean, that exists. There's that documentary about Jim Wynorski that's pretty close to that, basically.
Is there?
Papatopoulos, I think it's called.
Huh.
Yeah, it's actually completely worth watching.
I did not know that.
Yeah. There's, and I think there might even be more than one that's like that, because there's another one that's about the making of the Witches of Brestwick. So they're out. You can check that. I've always been fascinated by that genre.
Yeah.
That kind of, it's kind of a fun, cheeky romp, as opposed to, you know, we have to have a doctor here to inspect our genitals, and then we're going to fuck on camera. I've always been fascinated by these, like, oh, it's just a good time. Have everybody, oh, boobs are out. Yay. And now more movie happens, and then boobs are out. Yay. I've always found those kind of charming.
Yeah.
So I definitely checked out the Jim Wynorski doc when it was available, because I wanted to see the process by which these things come into existence.
And this movie, man.
Yeah, it sucks.
It's it's bad.
It's weirdly bad. There's some weird, weird things in here.
There are some weird choices that they make in here that you're like, I feel like there should have been a reasoning behind some of these things, and yet they're just sort of like, we had a guy,
so we had to put a scene with the guy.
Yeah, there's just a lot of choices in this movie.
A lot of hard choices in Hawaii.
I mean, I'll give it to them that at least they filmed in Hawaii.
Yeah, they definitely filmed in Hawaii, and also there's a lot of location shooting where they're not there that's like, you know, beautiful vistas of Molokai. Absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, I mean, at least it's not like, here we are in Hawaii, and it's clearly just like Southern California somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Here we are in dry, shitty Hawaii.
I do like that the boat that the main characters all hang out on all the time is still called the Malibu Express, though. I wonder if they were like, yeah, that's a city in California, and they're like, yeah, close enough.
Yeah,
Malibu sounds like a Hawaiian word. Don't worry about it.
It's fine. Don't worry. So yeah, you know, spoiler free, you don't need to watch this. The internet exists.
Yeah, you can go check out the best parts of it. I'm pretty sure
boobs.
Yeah. Almost. A lot of those are some strictly 80s bolt-ons.
I mean, the best part of this movie is definitely the snake. So
yeah, I was going to say it's the snake and the skateboarder. I feel like the boobs in this movie kind of are so, they're all pretty well enhanced, so to speak.
Enhanced.
And in that 80s surgery style where you can basically see the steel armatures that are holding them up still. Like, all the boobs in this movie are basically rigid octagons. They're like the Zeppelins of tits.
They're rigid octagons. As opposed to two dudes fighting on them.
I mean, as opposed to the blimp of tits, which is the modern day breast expansion. These are the kind where you can kind of see the corners in the silicone pads.
We've come a long way.
We've come so much further. We've made so many strides in getting nipples to point the same direction technology.
Yeah.
That you feel bad for the people who are in this film. because their surgery came before those strides. Yeah. And who knows what the future may hold.
Who knows? Yeah. Indeed.
Yeah. So anyway, the basic spoiler-free review, it's an action-y spy agent fight romp set on Hawaii, or various Hawaiian islands, and you do not need to see this.
No. So you know what? We're going to play a little music, and we are going to come right back with the full spoiler review of Hard Ticket to Hawaii.
It's a hard ticket to Hawaii. It's not paradise all the time. It's a hard ticket to Hawaii.
And we are back. It's time. Ooh, it's time.
I kind of feel bad that we watched this yesterday. Because it's such a bunch of disparate weird scenes, it's going to be hard to get to most of them.
Well, yeah, there are times where they'll just like cut to something that's happening and it has no bearing on anything, and then they'll go back to the plot.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, there's no way I'm going to remember everything that happened in this movie because it is just a jumble of nonsense.
Yeah, yeah. So, but I can tell you how it opens. It opens with one of our heroes, the only one whose name I don't know.
You know, I'm really sad that this movie isn't named after one of the characters so that I could call them the titular character.
Oh, I know. The titulus character. You should just go with that instead. But I can't remember which one this is. It's not Taryn. It's the other one whose name I don't remember.
Yeah, it's Donna?
Donna? Donna and Taryn.
I think it's Donna.
Donna sounds right. Well, Donna's swimming around, and it looks like she's in a pool, but she's not. She's in the glassy waters of Honolulu.
Ooh, yeah.
And she climbs out of onto the boat, the Malibu Express, where her boyfriend Rowdy is hanging around.
You always gotta love when someone's got a boyfriend named Rowdy. You're like, oh, did you get named after the dog? What?
Rowdy?
Yeah, this is my dog, Rowdy.
Were you born at a truck pull?
Unless your name follows with Roddy Piper, there is no reason that you should be called Rowdy.
Well, here we have a Rowdy. So Rowdy has not gotten into the water and instead is standing around with a glass of wine because they're having a romantic evening. And she says to him, you should go swimming. And he has a witty rejoinder of, no thanks, babe. I have better things to do with my body temperature.
I don't. What?
And
what is he plan? Is he going to hatch eggs? What is he doing with his body temperature?
He means he wants to make out with her, I think, because he wants to be nice and warm for his makeouts.
Ooh, I want to be nice and warm for my makeouts.
And they lightly kiss, and then they discuss how they're both DEA secret agents, like plainclothes DEA agents or something.
Yeah, they get into the boat, and they're like, ooh, I don't want you to go to Molokai. I want you to stay here in Honolulu with me.
And she's like, no, the agency sent me to Molokai, and I go where I'm needed. I'm an actual agent, and I
do the job.
I take this very seriously.
Now, if you don't mind, here are my tits.
Yeah, because the next thing she does, she goes, well, take this seriously, or something like that. And she just takes her towel off, and there's her boobs. And it's funny. This is the thing I love about this genre that I was talking earlier about how much I love this particular genre of films, is that everyone treats revealing their breasts as, like, a fun surprise.
They're like, hey, look!
Instead of, you know, oh, we've been dating for forever, and I know what your boobs look like. When she's like, well, check these out. And he's like, ah! And she's like, yeah! It's just...
Everyone's excited that breasts are involved.
Everyone's just so happy about boobs. It's like the whole world feels like I do all the time. And it's a universe I would like to inhabit.
That's why you like this genre so much, is because everyone inhabits the same brain space that you are always in, where you're just like, ah, boobs.
It's true. I love boobs. And so anytime I see these movies, everyone's just like, here's my boobs. And, you know, in a normal real world relationship, everyone's like, yeah, I've seen those. Or, okay, let us have sex. But in these movies, it's always like, oh, awesome. Let's focus in on those for a while.
And
not do anything with them. Just really appreciate.
Oh, yeah, because it's not porn, so no one gets to touch them.
No.
They just get to be out.
Yeah, they just come out.
And so it's always just like, hey, nice.
Mm-hmm.
It's never creepy like, yeah, look at those tits.
Yeah.
It's always just like, cool, and like, thumbs up. Mm-hmm. Good job,
yeah, exactly.
On those.
I love that. I love that the kind of charm that, that rolls around boobs and the revealing of boobs in these movies.
Yeah, it's a charming joy rather than like a creepy perversion.
Mm-hmm, exactly. It doesn't matter who's in the makeout session or whatever that comes next. There's just this good minute-long moment where they're like, ha-ha, my tits, and everyone's like, yay.
Oh, good.
It's like seeing a Christmas present.
Aw.
So, or like, she could easily, it would be the same if she just went, and I have puppies.
Yeah. You'd be like, aw.
Oh, puppies.
Nice.
Yay.
I like that.
Yeah. Well, anyway, she does that, and then they settle in for a good long makeouts, because this is the kind of movie where no one fucks.
Hell yeah. And yeah. Then,
now, we cut to some Hawaiian policemen.
This is probably one of my favorite scenes in mm-hmm. this movie,
yeah.
is these two policemen who show up on, like,
a Zodiac raft
dinghy.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, well, should we take the gun? Nah, leave the gun behind. Just leave it in this boat where anyone could find it. That's fine.
Yeah. So
we're good, responsible policemen.
So these guys are like two Molokai policemen, which means they work out of a Zodiac, and they go to a lot of extremely rural places. Molokai is not an especially well-settled island, especially in the late 80s.
And they're tromping through some overgrowth, and mm-hmm. they're just like, look, you're the new guy. I've been doing this route for, like, years, and I'm going to retire in a month. That definitely means I'm going to die right now.
Yeah.
But I want you to know, these guys sell drugs, but it's just, like, a little family farm marijuana.
Yeah, it's just a little weed farm.
And it's fine. It makes them get money. They spend it in the community. It's good for Molokai. I get a kickback for letting them do it. It's fine.
But I do got to come out here once a year and issue them a fine.
Yeah, I got to come out, do a fine just so I get some money.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone realizes that, you know, we know what they're doing, but it's okay.
Yeah. But this time they get out there and Mad Max has happened. There's a whole bunch of people like fixing and working on bikes.
There's a bunch of dudes with machine guns, and it's like a big operation instead of just a little weed farm now.
The other thing that's nice about this scene is this is the only time in this film you're going to see native Hawaiians.
It's true. There is one.
There's one big burly thug who might be native Hawaiian. We're not sure.
Yeah, there's one dude who looks like he's native Hawaiian, and that is it.
Yeah, these two cops are native Hawaiian, speaking with native Hawaiian accent, and it's kind of nice because the rest of it makes you think that mostly the entire island is populated by people who would be in Penthouse.
And indeed were.
Yeah, most of these were Penthouse or Hustler or Playboy types. Well, they see this, and the older cop is immediately like, well, that's not what's supposed to be here. Let's get the fuck out of here before it's too late.
Yeah, which I didn't appreciate, because I thought he was just going to be like, hey, what's going on? But he was like, oh, shit, no, this is fucked up. We got
to
go.
Yeah, so they turn and try to run, but they hit a tripwire, which does the Ewok trap thing and pulls them up into the air.
Yeah, we got dangle cops now.
And then some thugs come out and shoot them.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
And they seem to take way too much pleasure in this.
Yes, they
like
do.
Like fucking the Shades guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mirror. You just named Shades.
Yeah, Shades guy.
Yeah.
He's got mirror shades on, and he's just shoots both of them with like a shotgun. And he's like, ha, 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 yeah. And I'm like, you'd think maybe killing two cops would make you feel like, oh, damn it, they know we're here.
Yeah, eventually this is going to track back to us. We're going to have to do something about this unfortunate incident.
Yeah, but no, he's just happy to be here.
Yeah, he's just like, I'll kill cops out here. It doesn't matter. That there's no other cops. These are the two cops of Molokai.
Yep, that's it.
Yep. So that all happens, and we kind of get an establishing shot of our main thugs and our big villain, Seth, who comes out and is like, okay, feed these two cops and their boat to the shredder. He's got like a weird South America Spanish accent somewhere in there.
I cannot place him, because
yeah.
it could be somewhere European, mm-hmm. it could be South American. I have no idea.
Feed these two to the shredder and see how it goes. Then get back to work.
And you're like,
I'm like,
what?
What? Yeah. Are you like Bolivian by way of Russia? What the fuck is going on here?
What are we doing exactly? Well, that's about it for that. Then we cut back to Donna. Donna. And Donna's coming home to her house/office thing, which, as she's coming up, another woman comes running up from the beach in full bikini. Now, this is Taryn,
yep.
our other main character.
And she's going to immediately get topless and start taking a shower.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, one of those showers that is near the beach to just sort of rinse off sand.
Exactly, yeah.
But she's going to get topless for it.
Well, I really, the other thing I find funny about these kinds of movies is that you can tell where the line is. Because she's like, well, I need to take a shower, so I'm going to take my top off. But the movie's not, you know, X, so I'm not going to take my bottom off.
Oh, no.
So I'm going to get a shower except for the part, you know, the groin.
Yeah. No, that's everything in this. Just... Well, I can't take the bottom off.
That's whoa! Come on, what kind of show do you think we're running here? But anyway, yeah, the two of them have a fun conversation during which we establish that. So Taryn is a narcotics dealer or something who,
from what I gathered,
yeah,
it was she turned evidence
yeah.
on like a bunch of drug dealers,
mm-hmm.
and so the DEA put her in witness protection. But what they did was say, oh, for your witness protection, we're going to put you on Hawaii
mm-hmm.
and make it so that you're in the DEA.
Yeah, they basically make her a DEA agent working some plum ass office on Honolulu or out of Honolulu,
which feels real weird. Like, there's no point where like, oh, well, we got to make sure you're safe. So what we'll do is we'll hire you. I'm like, you don't get hired into the DEA for that.
Yeah. And well, you can tell they were just like, it was like a hackneyed premise thing. Whoever did it was like, ah, okay, so you've turned evidence, and now you're going to need witness protection, and you're a big, boobed, teased hair blonde, huh? Well, we've got one of those, so I'm going to assign you to her, and you guys have to wear matching outfits.
My guess is the person writing it was like, well, we've already got the no-nonsense, hard-ass agent,
mm-hmm.
so we need the bubbly, like, kind of ditzy one to go along with it, because those are the two things that we need in this.
Mm-hmm. And also, you both have to wear short jumpsuits.
Well, I mean, yeah.
I mean, duh. Or they choose to. I don't know.
They're like, okay, how are we going to get the dumb ditzy one to follow around a DEA agent? And they were like, she's also one, but not.
Yep, she's just a sort of a DEA agent, but it's like optional for her.
Yeah.
It's very weird.
She's just play acting at being an agent.
Yeah. Now, the two of them are being given an assignment. Now, this is the part that really can flip your lid when you try and think about it. They are assigned by some cargo hauling company called Molokai Freight to fly a Cessna with passengers and a live snake on it to Molokai I think it's Honolulu.
Yeah.
But it's not a DEA job.
No.
It's like they just have multiple jobs.
It's like they show up at this, like, freight shipping company,
mm-hmm.
and it just, like, no one seems to be confused by this, and in fact, Donna knows the person who runs this super well, like, they do this all the time,
mm-hmm.
and I go, hold on, as a DEA agent, you are here to give, like, tours and drop off wild animals? This seems very strange.
I guess people got to wear a lot of hats in Hawaii, John, because
there's a lot of sun.
There's just not enough people to go around, so everyone's got like four jobs.
Well, everyone's got a lot of hats.
I mean, technically, the unemployment rate there is enormous, but not for these ladies.
No, that's why it's enormous, because yeah. these DEA agents keep doing everyone's jobs.
They take all the jobs, and they drive around shooting their raps.
These DEA agents coming in.
Stealing all the snow. But yeah, So this dude is oh, by the way, this is also the opening credit sequence, is this factor that this warehouse where the dude is moving freight around has all like the opening credits.
I will say that was neat because it's
well
all
done.
It's all actually like spray painted onto the side of boxes,
mm-hmm.
and they'll like turn a box and on the other side is another name, and I was like, oh, that's a neat little thing.
Old fashioned clever. I liked it. But yeah, it turns out these two ladies have a job to fly a Cessna to Molokai, which is coincidentally useful because Donna has recently been assigned to be the DEA agent person who's in Molokai. Now, the cargo they're carrying is a pair of honeymooning tourists who are going to get dropped off on a random beach somewhere and then checked on the next day.
Yeah.
And also a snake, which is going to be going to the Molokai Wildlife Center. It'll be the first ever snake on the island of Molokai.
I guess.
And they're directed to give instructions to the... they have like a book that goes with it. Unfortunately, there's been some bumbling in this scene.
Oh, yeah. Where some forklift operator did not pass his forklift license because he is very bad at this. Knocks mm-hmm. into a crate, manages to use the prong to rip off a thing that says like Caution, danger, contaminated.
Yeah, it turns out that the freight office currently has two giant snakes in it. One of them is a super contaminated mega danger snake, and the other is a regular pet snake. And they, obviously, because it's important for the movie, they accidentally load the super danger snake onto the plane. And then they... So the two agents show up, Taryn and Donna show up, in what looks like Daisy Duke cut-off UPS uniforms that have been V-cut down to the navel.
Yeah, so they've got, like a button-down khaki shirt that is just unbuttoned down to the navel, and the sleeves are rolled up, and then just short shorts.
But it's a jumpsuit. It's all one piece. It's insane looking. And it's also very loose and baggy, except at the ass. It's the weirdest outfit. And there's a point where the two of them go kind of happily jog bouncing over to the airplane to look at it. And the dude who runs the place spins around to look at their butts. But there's a moment where my first thought was, he was like, what the fuck are those outfits? Not so much that he was being like horny.
Like, ooh, look at them. He was like, what the fuck?
Who? That's the DEA has gone nuts.
Shouldn't you be in a regulation outfit?
Yeah, that's what are you? You're going to fight an American gladiator? What is this?
Yeah, the thing with the snake for me in this, by the way, is so weird. Because this snake is like the C-plot, but it gets, I'm going to say, like maybe 15 minutes of screen time.
Yeah, and let's be clear, they don't skimp on the snake either. You get to see this thing right away and right up close, and it is a hand puppet. It's a wet hand puppet.
It is a moist hand puppet of a snake that the person using the hand puppet is also making the noise, because it just like shows up on screen and goes,
yeah. It's just, what are you, what?
What the snake, fuck?
This snake looks insane. What are we doing? But yeah, anyway, they load up their two tourists and they fly to Molokai, which is just some beautiful location footage and the movie's official song.
Yeah, it's a hard ticket to Hawaii.
Yeah. And then they land in a golf course in Molokai.
Yeah.
Where they walk, they get out of the airplane and walk the tourists to their new their destination. At that point, the guy who runs the freight facility finds the snapped off harness that said danger contaminated on the snake. And he's like, oh shit, you morons. They took the wrong snake to Molokai.
He's like, did you just not load up a snake? No, we did. Well, you got the wrong snake.
So he tries to radio them and he can't get them at the moment. So he makes a phone call to someone else to try and explain what's going on, and he says the funniest line in the movie by a country mile, which is, you gotta be careful with this snake. It's super contaminated. It's loaded with toxic fluids from cancer-infested rats. What?
I love the idea that this snake is hopped up on cancer rats and so is super dangerous.
I mean, were we just saying that they accidentally fed it cancer-infested rats? Or
like,
or
was this that a mad part of scientist? The experiment?
Yeah. Is this a mad science thing? What are we doing? Why?
And also, if it's like, oh, this is a super dangerous, fucked up thing, why is it in a crate at a shipping company? Like
in Hawaii, of all places. How would it even get there?
I know.
Snakes aren't endemic to Hawaii.
Where was it headed in the first place?
Where its first stop was Honolulu. But I mean, I guess.
Especially when we find out later, he's like, oh, that snake's going to die within the next like 36 hours. And you go, then why were you shipping it somewhere?
I mean, Honolulu is basically on the way to nowhere.
Oh, yeah. It's just in the middle of the ocean.
Yeah.
What are you doing
Maybe
here?
Maybe in the late 80s it was part of a jump flight from like Los Angeles to Japan or the other way around, but that'd be about it.
I don't... it's so weird.
It's very, very unusual.
I think, like, the director had to have just had this puppet lying around and been like, well, I gotta put this in the fucking movie.
I mean, that wouldn't be the only time he was just like, hey, let's just put this in the movie. This is funny.
Or that, or some other movie he made had a snake, and he's like, well, I already paid for this damn thing.
I have a spare snake.
I gotta use this.
Okay, well, then we cut right to the next scene, which is another example of the director just having a thing lying around, because we cut out to a boat where a James Bond-type villain dude, like an old bald white guy, is like standing around saying, yes, it's time to send Seth his payment in exchange for the drugs that we collect from him each day. And he has a radio-controlled helicopter.
Yes, he does. Like, that he controls with his cane.
With a single button on his cane.
He's like, ah, yes, this one button on top of my cane will send this helicopter to the exact specifications that I want.
Mm-hmm. Man, that is some jumped up helicopter equipment. If it goes offshore from Molokai Inn, I mean, my parents were friends with a bunch of RC airplane people in the late 80s and early 90s. They couldn't do that. They weren't drones yet.
No.
But this thing was running on 2-stroke engine fuel.
I'm running on 2-stroke fuel, if you know what I mean. I don't.
I don't either. Something about how you're bad at wieners.
Oh, this guy's bad at wieners.
Oh, man. I want to be able to write that into my Grindr profile.
Bad at wieners.
Just a warning, bad at wieners.
Warning, bad at wieners.
Okay, so the helicopter comes flying into Molokai to make the drop. Unfortunately, it flies right up to our two heroes.
Yeah, because they are, in the same way that the first two police were looking around, they're in the exact same place, yeah, essentially, that they were.
Just tramping around in the far reaches of Molokai. And then the helicopter
like,
comes flying up.
A fucking helicopter.
What is this? What? And then it lands and a little door opens on the side of it. They're like, oh, a door.
Look,
and
two little boxes.
Two little chipmunk dolls. We'll trade it for these Chipette dolls.
Oh, we're the ones with the diamond dolls.
Diamond doll. No, there's two little boxes, and they manage to get one box, but the other one falls out of the helicopter just as thugs arrive and start shooting.
Yeah. They can't quite get this box because, you know, thugs.
This also brings up my favorite, probably the D or E plot of the movie and one of my favorite ones, which is that Taran has a pair of nunchucks, and they will change hands several times throughout the film, and no one will ever use them as nunchucks.
Nobody in this film knows how to use nunchucks, but again, this was one of those things where like, well, we got fucking nunchucks. Obviously, we're putting it in the movie. So in this scene, she just throws them at a dude, but manages to have them later on, even though she runs away without getting them.
Mm-hmm.
And later in the film, anyone else who has them just like uses it like a club and just beats the shit out of someone without using the chain part.
So two of the three goons who shot the cops are here. There's Big Fat Hawaiian Guy, and there's Sandy Haired Mustache Man. Now, Sandy Haired Mustache Man takes a pair of nunchucks to the head, but, you know, thrown. And the Hawaiian Guy, Donna pulls a collapsible ninja star out of her boot
that looks for all the world like one of those fucking old-timey sheriff badges.
It does. It looks like the ninja stars I made when I was a kid. The kind you make out of like folding tinfoil in a very specific shape.
Yeah.
Like a pinwheel, basically. So she hurls that and it hits the Hawaiian dude in the chest and he falls over. But then she runs up and gathers it up.
She's like, oh, I can't leave this.
Takes it out of him. And then they run off and get in the airplane and fly away.
Man.
The nunchuck plot is one of my favorite things.
The nunchuck thing is wonderful in this. And I also super love that she throws this weird, like, shitty badge-looking ninja star, has to go out of her way to retrieve it, and it is never seen again.
Yep.
Like, the fact that she has to be like, oh, I need this back, but I will never use it.
Yeah, well, she already got one guy with it.
I got a guy with it.
And interestingly, that guy does spend the rest of the movie clutching his chest in pain.
I will say this. The continuity where, for the rest of the movie, he's got, like, a patch over that part where he was hit. I was like, ah, yeah. Look at you.
And the other guy has a not a bandage exactly, but you can see the bruise on his head from where he got hit with chucks.
Yeah.
They kept this. I mean, like, I can't wait for the next scene with those two idiots. Oh, wait, there's an interstitial.
Oh, yeah. Well, first we need to check in with Rowdy and
Jade?
No.
Is it Jade or Jace or Jason?
Maybe.
I thought it was Rowdy and Jade.
No. It's not Jade.
Probably because that guy looks like a Mortal Kombat character.
But they are on the boat, the Malibu Express, and they are doing kung fu, which then leads to horrible racism.
So to give you a description of these two, Rowdy's the kind of guy who is in an 80s boob comedy normally.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he's got
Rowdy
that,
the kind of guy who's in a boob comedy.
You know the actors who are in those movies. Agreeably good looking, but not the kind of person you would expect to see in anything but this movie.
Yeah. Jade, good looking, but not charismatic.
Yeah. And Jade is a giant muscle man. I'm going to call him Jade. I could have sworn that was his name, and I don't care. But you don't have anything better, so his name is Jade now.
No, I don't. And I'm not going to look it up.
Yeah. So Jade is a big muscle dude with a ponytail.
He is
vaguely
the casting where they put out like, hey, need a muscle dude that can do karate.
Mm-hmm.
And that is their only requirement.
Yeah, might be the slightest bit not white, because I feel like he has something else going on.
Something going on, maybe, or he might just be tan.
He could just be very tan, but yeah. So the two of them are doing kung fu fighting at each other, and they're, you know, they're doing the "Wah!" kind of noises.
They have an entire Confucius say mm-hmm. moment.
Yeah.
Oh, God, it is real bad.
Yeah, one of them is like, Confucius say, blah, blah, blah. The other one responds with a different, it's a Genghis Khan or something, where it's just bad.
They're just doing horrible Asian stereotype nonsense back and forth at each other.
So both of these guys are also DEA agents, I think.
But apparently.
We never see them in any kind of uniform.
I mean,
or
we know
kind of
Rowdy
phone.
Is.
Yeah. Jade might just be some helper dude.
I don't have a single fucking clue what's going on with that guy.
Well, they're waiting around for instructions from the DEA, and they come in the form of a dude who comes out there to their boat on a motorcycle. They're docked, so, you know. So,
yeah.
So a moped comes riding up with a dude who has a sandwich for them.
Yeah, here's your lunch, and inside of one of those styrofoam containers is a sandwich, mm-hmm. and inside the sandwich is a folded piece of paper that has the instructions that say, like, hey, drugs are happening in Molokai, you know, be wary of that, mm-hmm. take a look and look after whatever the name of the villain guy is. It's like Ray or Rich or
the one who's the bald dude.
The guy can't tell who where he's from.
That's Seth.
Seth.
Yeah, because the other guy's name is just like Jake.
Mr. Chang.
Thank you. Yeah. So Seth.
Yeah.
But
so then they have to be like, oh man, I wish when they sent these instructions they'd give us something to eat. I'm hungry. I'm like, my dude, you have a sandwich there.
A sandwich is there, the most universal of foods.
But what we need to do is we need to burn this so that no one knows that we had that. And they decide the best way to do this is to stick it back in the sandwich.
Yeah, they stick the note in the sandwich, light it on fire, when it goes up instantly. Like, this was a lighter fluid sandwich.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But the sandwich doesn't burn. It's just flash paper, which means the paper goes poof. And then the sandwich is fine, the box is fine, but then they close it as if my job here is done.
I mean, you saw that Jade fellow. That guy does not eat sandwiches.
That man has never eaten a carb.
Yeah, he is completely fat free. So these two muscle dudes, that's our introduction to them. They're just big goofuses, and they are also kind of racist.
Great.
And then we cut to the Molokai office for the DEA, where Donna and Taryn are landing their airplane right next to another airplane in what looks like a parking lot. And then they get out and they're like, all right, so they have a brief moment where they're like walking through their house. But the first thing that happens is,
well, they have to be like, what are we going to do?
Yeah, we have to call Rowdy and Jade.
Yeah, we found these dudes with guns and we've got this box and I don't know what's in it. What are we going to do?
Well, the first thing we should do is take a bath. I think much better when I'm in the jacuzzi.
Yeah, I do my best thinking in the jacuzzi.
Uh-huh.
Okay, great.
Uh-huh.
Which just means we cut to jacuzzi with topless lady, and I think it's Taryn is in there.
No, it's...
Or Donna's in there.
Donna's in
Taryn
there.
Gets in, and they spend a conversation in there. They're like, what's in this box? It's diamonds.
They never even put their boobs below the water.
No.
They get in the water awkwardly. Their hair is perfectly dry. And Taryn comes up and she goes, the thing in the box was diamonds. Oh my gosh. We need to alert Rowdy and Jade right away. Let's go.
And just get right back out again. I feel like in these movies, there is a set time limit between when you can do plot and when you have to show boobs again.
I mean, there's a horror movie thing where they have a correct amount of time between scares, right?
Yeah, and so, I feel like that's got to be in here. They're like, oh, yeah. I'm sorry, it's been like 10 minutes. We cannot have a scene without boobs in it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, all right, we have the discussion we were going to have, but we're topless at like thigh level water,
mm-hmm.
and then we get out again.
I kind of wish there was even more blatant one of one some at some point in the movie, like, the two of us need to have a conversation. Let's just get our tits out. I mean, if I were making one of these movies, and let's go ahead and say that if System Mastery ever launches a Kickstarter, it's going to be
the only thing it will be for is the System Mastery titty movie.
Yeah, the System Mastery titty movie where we just make one
where
of these
we just show John's tits,
just show your tits. I just want to make one of these old fashioned titty movies.
Yeah,
that's just a thing I want. That's my life dream. So that'll be our first Kickstarter.
Great.
The second one can be whatever you want, John. Is it also to make a titty movie?
No.
Is it a horror movie?
No.
Get a book published?
Yeah.
Oh, a titty book?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
A horror titty book.
A horror titty
book. I want
book.
Ghost titties.
I just love this art form so much. It's like just a celebration of the boob. Anyway, the two of them have this 5-second fucking conversation, and then they get out and they go have a conversation in the house, and then their house is raided by thugs.
Well, we find out that their phone doesn't work, so no one can get a hold of them at the house, and they also can't call from there.
Yeah, we should probably have the bit that happens at Edie's, the bar, because that's the thing.
Because the other thing is, there is a restaurant called Edie's, where side characters get to be terrible?
Yeah, it's just a spot for side characters to be annoying. The first one we meet is a dude named Ashley. Ashley is the maitre d' of Edie's.
And he's
a perv.
He's a pervert who's constantly like, "Hey, why don't you come over here? I got the perfect seat for you. It's my face."
Yeah, he's that kind of guy. And he does it to everybody who comes in.
Yeah.
And then there's the owner of the bar, Edie, who we don't know at this point, but she's actually Jade's girlfriend.
Yeah.
And then there's a few other characters just sort of wandering around in there.
We have a TV producer that we get introduced to as a woman sits down as like, "You almost raped me last night." And he's like, "That was last night, baby."
What's weird is that that woman is nothing. She's only in that one scene.
Never shows up again.
Yeah.
And the TV producer only shows up one more time, but doesn't have any business to do with the actual plot.
And pretty much for the same joke. Because what happens is he's like, that was last night, baby. That was today. I'm a changed man. I'm all about you. And then like a waiter comes up in a low cut shirt, and she's like, "What'll you have today?" And he looks at her tits for like a minute and says, "I'll have a pair of coffee."
Yeah. So that's just him.
Yeah, basically this is where bits are there to happen. By the way, in our intermission that we just had to have, we had to learn that we have to be a little quieter, so we'll just be...
We're going to take it down a notch.
We'll go to smooth.
But in this little intermission, which, it's magic to you all. You didn't notice, but we had a little time there. I looked it up. It is Jade.
Oh,
which
shit.
Is weird.
Hell yeah.
And I also looked up the person who played Taryn,
mm-hmm.
and she was in, like, Ghoulies 3 and Nightmare on Elm Street 4.
Nice.
She was in a bunch of, like, the shitty versions of franchise movies.
Good for her.
Yeah.
That's work.
Yeah.
I knew it was Jade. Is it actually Donna? Were we right about that?
I think so, yes.
Okay, good. Well, then we're batting pretty well today.
Yeah.
Way better than we usually do.
The memory on this one is great, considering this movie just flows out of my head.
It is super weird, and long stretches of it are boring. But anyway,
like, I swear to God, at one point during this, the snake... Has the snake gotten out yet?
Yeah, the snake's gotten out, but they have not been able to contact anyone about the snake yet because their phone lines were cut.
Yeah, but I feel like the snake got out...
Pretty much right after they landed the plane.
Okay.
Yeah, when they landed the plane for the second time, when they got back to their house, because the snake's hanging around. No, the snake's hanging around.
No, I think it gets out after the thugs attack the house, which we were going to get to after Edie's.
That is exactly what happens, because it first gets out and scares Seth.
Yeah, so the only thing that really extra happens at Edie's is we get introduced to Seth in Edie's, and, you know, she tries to find out some information from him about what's going on, and he just sort of dodges it. But then his two dumb idiots that got, like, a nunchuck and a ninja star thrown at them
explain, yeah.
And he goes outside and is like, "You dumb idiots, I'm going to have to get somebody that can do this job."
Yeah.
And by that, I mean this lady I'm with.
Yeah, and some guy that's her friend.
And then someone.
And also, he has one of the best lines in the film, which is, "You two morons, if bird shit were brains, you'd have clean cages."
I love Seth. Every time he's on screen, I'm like, I don't know what's going on with you, my dude, but I like it.
I kind of wanted the two goons to like try and figure out where he's from at that point, and they'd be like, "Oh, I like that expression. That must be a regional expression from, finish my sentence.
from my grandmother." God damn it.
"Oh, can you tell me what kind of excellent regional food she made when you were growing up as a kid?"
"My grandmother was a terrible cook. We never had anything."
God damn it.
Oh, fucking shit.
And what did you call her growing up? Like, did you have a special name? Did you call her Meemaw or something?
No, we were not close.
We will never know where Seth is from.
So, the two goons get admonished, and then he's like, "I'll send out actual professional people."
Yeah.
So then the attack on Donna and Terrence house sets up a thing that happens in this movie a lot,
mm-hmm.
which is great. And that is everyone has access to guns, but no one uses them unless someone else also has one.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you can't show up and be like, oh, I've got a gun and you've got a knife and we're going to do this. It's always, I've got a knife and you've got, like, a nunchuck, or I've got fists and you've got a small knife.
Yeah. Now, we also establish that we get to see what their sleepwear looks like.
Yeah.
Which is mostly just Van Halen-style underboob shirts.
Yes. It's very White Snake in there.
Yeah, and very high of pant. And then they get assaulted. One of the woman cuts the phone line. That's why the phone doesn't work. And they never figure that out. They just spend the whole rest of the movie going, the phones don't work. The phones
How
still
weird.
Don't work. And there's never a point where they're like, oh, our line was cut by those two people who invaded our house. But yeah, these two people wearing pantyhose.
Yeah, they got stockings over their face.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like one for each of the two of them. And I gotta say, the guy who goes after Donna has the world's dinkiest knife,
mm-hmm.
and it is hilarious
to me.
He
basically pulls a box cutter.
Like, it's... I would feel more threatened by a box cutter, because it's just like an inch and a half blade.
Yes.
It's just like, I got a knife. Yeah. I'll cut you.
I mean, to be fair, what kills you when you get stabbed is the hydrostatic shock, and it doesn't matter how big the knife is, but it's not the size of the knife, John.
I know. It's how you use it to cut a fool.
Yeah. But anyway, they get into little fights, and Donna more or less wins her fight.
Yeah.
But Taryn does not, and she shows the woman where the diamonds are, and then they're getting away, but Donna's pissed off about them getting away.
And so she actually gets to have a gun.
Yeah. Now, also, while we're hanging around, the snake escapes from the airplane box and scares the getaway driver, who is Seth.
Yeah, because I think the goons check the plane first to see if the diamonds are there, and they just sort of leave
the little door
cargo hold open.
Yeah. So the snake gets out, and Seth, who is 100 feet away from the airplane, sees the snake, freaks out, and tries several times to shoot it.
Well, and I love that this snake, like you say, is just could not be farther away from, like, barely within eyesight of him, and he is screaming bloody murder as he attempts to shoot at it. And I'm like, my dude, you'd think you're right next to a car. Like, if you were freaked out that bad, you'd probably just, I don't know, get in the car?
Close the door.
Yeah.
Snakes don't really have a whole lot of options. I mean, they're
not like raptors. They can't open doors.
Yeah. Snakes are very predictable in terms of what they're going to do next, even when they're all hopped up on cancer-infested rat.
Ooh, that boy he's riding high on cancer rat.
Here comes that cancer rat boy.
Oh, shit, what up?
So he starts shooting at it, but the two goons come running out. They only have some of the diamonds. They're basically like, you better bring us the other diamonds or else.
Yeah,
this ain't over.
There's supposed to be two boxes, and they think they have both of them.
Yes, and they do not. They've left one in the woods. Well, Donna comes running outside. She's pissed off, and she just shoots at them and hits Seth in the fucking face.
Yeah, shoots him what looks like dead on in the face, but apparently it was just a graze across his cheek. But it really, I thought it just hit him straight in the cheek. I was like, fuck, that dude is screwed.
I was really hoping that she just murdered him. And the movie had to do a whole thing where leadership fell into a vacuum in the thug gang and they had to switch
leaders. Yeah, just like fucking Shades takes over. And he's like, well, I guess I've got the best mirror Shades, so I'm in charge now.
It turned out they cast Seth to be the big bad guy, but he had to leave for some reason. They're like, fine, you get shot in the fucking face in this movie.
Yeah, fuck you, buddy.
But no, he just gets grazed and is really mad about it. But then they get away.
And so does the snake.
And the snake also escapes into the Hawaiian night. At this point, I think we could go ahead and talk about the scene where Rowdy and Jade get to the island? Get to Molokai?
I guess.
There's more business at Edie's, basically.
There is a lot of dumb nonsense that happens in this movie,
I think the next thing that happens is we go back to Edie's, and Jimmy John Jackson, the third love interest, because Taryn needs a love interest too.
Yep.
So Jimmy John Jackson shows up. He's a local sportscaster and also does sports interviews.
Well, there's a NFL, like, I think
this guy's celebrating the Super Bowl win or something.
I think it's supposed to be, don't they normally have, like, the Pro Bowl or whatever.
Oh, that's right. They have a Rose Bowl or Flower Bowl or whatever the one in Hawaii.
It's the Pro Bowl.
Pro Bowl, yeah, okay.
The Rose Bowl is in Barbara,
the Bahamas. It's in Barbara.
It's in Barbara.
No, anyway,
Burbank.
There are importantly a pair of football guys here for him to interview, but we're not going to see them yet. They get one ridiculous scene.
Yeah.
Instead,
Jimmy
John Jackson shows up and sits randomly down at a table with two dudes who are just sitting there being quiet, which is perfect because he's about to launch into a long description of the vitamin pills he takes every day and why.
Yes. The two dudes there are, I'm going to assume, footballsmen, but he's like, you know what I do every day? I take these vitamins. And it's just, this here is B complex.
Yeah.
And that's great for getting the whole thing working together. Over here, we got E. And I'm like, okay, are we just going to keep going on this?
What are we doing? This is lecithin. And I'm like, oh my God, are we seriously doing lecithin? And then he finally ends on, and this is vitamin C. 4 grams and I take it twice a day.
10 grams.
Is it 10 grams?
It's 10 grams.
That's so much more than you can take.
That is like lethal doses of vitamin C.
I don't think there's a lethal dose known of vitamin C, but it would make you dizzy and throw up.
Yeah, it would fuck your shit up.
Yeah. It's just a ridiculous amount of vitamin C.
Yeah. I hate to say that perhaps maybe the writers of Hard Ticket to Hawaii didn't do enough research on pills.
I'm amazed they made this scene happen at all. I mean, this isn't boobs. This is just some dude talking to two other dudes. And then when he gets up and leaves, because he just does a little speech on pills, and he's like, all right, gentlemen, goodbye. And he gets up and walks away. One of them looks at the other one and goes, I love soul food. And that is their entire, they're literally credited as soul food appreciators
there
in the credits.
That's it. That's all we get with them.
Mm-hmm. But the other thing we establish is that one of the bartenders at Edie's, a woman that everyone calls Michelle, is a spy who works for Seth. And she can do a thing where she plugs a jack into a phone and listens into conversations.
Yeah, she's got a little listening device and listens in as they have to go to Edie's to use the phone since theirs doesn't work. Mm-hmm. And they call on Rowdy to be like, hey, shit's going down. We got shot at. We need backup.
So Rowdy and Jade show up by boat. And this is the scene I really wanted to get to. They show up by boat. They get in a Jeep that's waiting for them at the dock they land
at. Well, you missed the love scene between Jimmy, John, and Taryn.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
And I mean the scene where they just sit on a beach and she's got her tits out.
And they make out for what seems like a day and a half? Like, yeah. I'm not saying that it feels that long in the movie. What I'm saying is that by the position of the sun and the way that they film the scenes, it looks like they're there from the morning one day to the afternoon the next day.
Yeah, because when they get to Edie's and they make the call, it is nighttime.
Mm-hmm.
And we see plenty of outdoor shots. And at the same time, Taryn's like, ooh, that's a dude and I'm going to have sex with him. And then we cut to them at the beach and it is morning.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, they're walking along the beach in the morning with some champagne.
And we get shots of them, like, on the beach, being topless, making out. And as we get these shots, it gets later and later in the day in the shots to the point where it seems like they spent an entire day on the beach being topless and hanging out. But in the scene previous at Edie's, they were like, oh, we're going to meet you tomorrow and we have to do something tomorrow about this.
Like, when I was 15 or 16, I could see that date being a thing. Like, well, because San Diego has one of the few functional nude beaches in the United States. So I could see that being a thing where I would have done that when I was 16. We'll go to Blacks and you'll get your top off and we won't fuck because we're 16, but we'll make out all day. That sounds rad. But when you're like in your mid-20s like these characters, that's weird.
You're like, no, we're not, because then I would be sunburned, and that would be sad.
Yeah, let's go someplace where there's a bed and finish this deal.
let's go ahead and seal the deal.
Yeah, but then again, I do appreciate this particular genre of film.
I know. I know you do.
Yeah, and therefore, the fact that she's just like, hey, boobs, and he's like, hell yeah, boobs.
I am satisfied with that, and it is great.
I am going to hug you in the area around them, being careful not to touch them, because this isn't that kind of movie.
Indeed. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure I will get in trouble if I do that, and so I shan't.
If I put my thumb on one on accident or something, the camera will catch you jerking away from it, because that's not contract.
Yeah, it'll see your hand go, whoa, hold on.
Hey there, buddy.
Whoa, move it away.
So, those are insured. The two of them make out all day. You're right. That was a thing we almost missed. The thing about this movie is there's always time to stop and go have sex somewhere.
Oh, yeah. The best part about this is in between, I think this is the part where in between them, like, getting together on the beach, and then Donna shows up to take Taryn away so they can go do their business because mm-hmm. they're going to spy on Seth's.
Yes.
In between that and the point where Rowdy and Jade land, it just cuts to our hand puppet Snake going through the grass. We get about 10 seconds of this, and then it cuts away, and it doesn't do anything.
That's right. This is because it kills some people later, but for the moment, we just see it moving around.
They were just like, hey, I just wanted to remind you the snake's out there. Yeah, anyway, back to the movie.
Don't forget about the snake, guys. It's an important subplot.
This is important.
Yeah. Well, Rowdy and Jade show up, get a Jeep, and are driving up towards Molokai when they... So this is the third best line of the movie. I'm just listing them sequentially. I'm not actually making judgment calls.
Yeah.
A dude comes, it's one of the two thugs, the nunchuck hit thug, comes skateboarding past them, going downhill on his hands.
Yeah, he's doing a handstand on a skateboard downhill.
And Jade's response to that is, oh, look at this guy. That guy must be smoking some heavy doobies.
Smoking some heavy doobies. God damn it, movie. You're so bad, but there are points on this where I'm just like, really? Okay.
I love that line so much. That's going to be what I say about my weed-smoking friends forever now.
Smoking some heavy doobies.
Hey, fellas, what you up to? You smoking some heavy doobies?
Huh? I'm going to do that. Well, since it's legal now, I'm just going to go into a dispensary and be like, excuse me, do you have any heavy doobies?
I mean, I have a big fucking joint in my freezer right now. I won it in a Christmas contest.
Yeah, you won it in a contest. You called in.
It was a white elephant gift exchange.
I know.
But, I mean, it's a big fucker. It's the size of like a permanent marker.
It's like a thumb.
Yeah, it's basically like a Sharpie. So I apparently have a heavy doobie.
Yeah.
But I'll never smoke the damn thing. I'm looking after a kid 24 hours a day. What am I? No.
Well, I mean, you got to pass. You got to puff, puff, pass to the baby.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. Is she doesn't want me.
You've never tried. You don't know how much into the weed culture Sage is.
Imagine how much she'd cough on that thing. She'd be wasting it. Amateurs. Not my thing, man.
Amateurs. Mm-hmm.
If you want to take a pass at that thing.
Oh, yeah. That's mm-hmm. what I love. Yeah, I love smoking heavy doobies.
Yeah, man. Let's smoke a heavy doobie. We're in California. We can just say that.
We can do it.
Yeah.
We can be like, hey, cops, I'm smoking weed.
And they'll be like, well, why?
You and they're like, yeah, same.
Yeah. Well, they'd be like, you can't just do it outside, buddy. You're under arrest.
I'd be like, well, oh, I mean, I'm not currently smoking weed. Damn it, I'm just saying I do smoke weed.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Wisdom.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Fuck bitches. Smoke trees.
Anyway, smoking some heavy doobies. Well, he passes them.
Yeah.
And then it turns out that the other thug is down at the bottom of the hill in a Jeep. And he's like, all right, let's go get him. And then the skateboard guy.
Their plan here is amazing.
It's completely insane.
Because he rolls past them mm-hmm. in a skateboard.
On his hands.
Goes to a truck. Gets in the truck with his skateboard.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
The truck drives past them.
John, please remind me and the audience, who's in the passenger seat of the truck?
Well, that would be the gentleman who is smoking heavy doobies.
No, he's in the bed of the truck standing up. Now, who's in the passenger seat of the truck?
Oh, that's right. The passenger seat is a blow-up doll.
A blow-up sex doll.
There is no mention. No one says anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
It just is there.
It's also there.
And
it's important, as we'll learn very soon.
So their plan is to drive their truck past this Jeep.
Mm-hmm.
And then skateboard guy is going to get out, and he'll have a gun.
He has a rifle, too.
He has a rifle, mm-hmm. and he decides, you know what? Since I'm going to be skateboarding towards them, shooting them with a rifle, I may as well take the blow-up doll with me.
For cover, probably. I mean...
probably.
Yeah, they wouldn't shoot a blow-up doll.
I'm
going to
use this blow-up doll as a human shield while I shoot at a Jeep skateboard towards them instead of perhaps, say, shooting at them from the back of the truck or anything else.
So the plan starts off quite successfully.
Oh, yeah.
He manages to shoot the tire
of the Jeep.
The truck goes skating past the Jeep. He gets out. He skates down the hill with a sex doll. There's a point where Jade and Rowdy see the truck go by, and they're like, oh, that guy's being real aggressive. Oh, I guess it's over. It seems like we lost him. And then they're like, oh, here he comes again on the skateboard. It's that same doobie guy. Oh shit, he's got a gun. Because he's hiding the gun behind the sex doll. It's a rifle. He's riding a skateboard, using a rifle at point blank range to shoot a Jeep while holding a sex doll. Now their response, Jade gets hit by a ricochet when it hits the tire of the Jeep, or the engine of the Jeep, I think, because it's smoking after that.
And of course, Rowdy's decision of escalation here. Yes.
Well, it's a three-step process. Step one, Jade smashes the Jeep into reverse and hits skateboard guy, knocking him into the air.
Yeah.
Now Rowdy takes over, and John, please.
Rowdy goes into the back, and they've got, when they were talking on the phone, they say they're going to bring their trunk of toys.
Mm-hmm.
The trunk of toys is, of course, weapons.
Mm-hmm.
He reaches into the back and pulls out a mini rocket launcher.
Mm-hmm. It has four rockets in it.
He shoots a rocket at the thug who is currently flying in the air because he was hit,
mm-hmm,
and blows him up. This, however, is not enough for Rowdy.
Oh, goodness, no.
Rowdy also sees that the blow-up doll has been flying through the air and shoots a rocket at the blow-up doll.
It gets it, too.
And then he is sad that he didn't get the skateboard.
Yeah, he's like, oh, the skateboard got away. I mean, the two of them kill this guy with, like, absolute wanton disregard.
They blow him into tiny little pieces, and there's no point where they're like, oh, man, maybe that was a little overkill.
Mm-hmm.
They
don't even say, like, oh, we're going to have to file a report or anything.
No. And the fact that they used a rocket on a blow-up doll,
mm-hmm,
I feel like at that point, if I was the one who owned that, I'd be like, hey, man, do you know how much a rocket fucking costs? Do you know the ammo for this? Jesus.
You know the street value of that blow-up doll? But yeah, he sits back down at the end. He's like, yeah, got him. Skateboard got away, though. Anyway, how bad are you hit? And Jade's like, oh, it's just a graze. I'll be fine. The Jeep is worse than me.
Yeah, they have to go to a hospital to take care of that.
Now, let's just be clear here. When they go to a hospital, also Jade probably gets blown by the nurse or something because he comes out of the building with a patch on. He's like, that nurse gave me extra special attention,
she
bro.
She was very attentive to my needs. I'm like, aren't you supposed to be dating Edie? What the fuck is this?
It's an open relationship.
We've got an agreement.
It's the kind of open relationship where I know it's an open relationship and she maybe doesn't.
I think I mentioned open relationship at some point and she said, that doesn't sound great, but she didn't say no.
Oh my God. So yeah, the two of them get to a hospital and they call Edie's to get a ride from Edie. They're like, hey, our Jeep doesn't work anymore. Can you come pick us up? We're at this hospital.
Yep.
Now, at this point, Edie says she's going to go get them, and she... God, we're skipping around here.
The waitress listens in on that.
Yeah. Now, this is a boob scene. It's two boob scenes in rapid consecutive order. The waitress listens in on that, so we know the waitress knows, and she's in Seth's pocket. Edie runs to a room and gets changed in a scene that exists solely so we can see her boobs.
Yeah. She just stands there, like, facing towards the camera, just, like, looking at the camera,
mm-hmm,
and very purposefully not breaking eye contact, takes her top off. And you're like, wow, that was really aggressive.
Yeah, and then she jumps in a 80s BMW convertible and drives away. Then the waitress goes to her room at Edie's, apparently.
Just whatever sort of changing room they have there.
But as she gets into the room, there's a woman out swimming in a pool, and the woman gets out of the pool, walks into the room where the waitress is, takes her top off and is like, see, Michelle, you got to work out more because the more you work out, the better your tits look. I work out 4 hours a day for these girls.
Yeah. And she's like, you need better tits. And if you worked out, you'd have better tits.
And then she just walks away, never to be seen again.
Yep. Just walks right out of the movie.
And Michelle's like, yeah, okay, thank you. Sure. And then Michelle reveals the dramatic secret of the film.
Oh, no. Michelle is a dude named Michael.
Yeah. And Michelle is Michael and he is now taking off all the makeup.
Yeah. Gets out of the dress and the wig and all the makeup and then... for the rest of the movie, will just be a regular goon-looking dude.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it.
Just some skinny bald dude. So he runs and jumps in a van, and the van takes off down the road because they're going to kidnap Edie.
Yeah.
As collateral to keep Rowdy and Jade out of their business, I think. And also because they think Edie might know where the diamonds are.
Maybe.
It's confusing.
Well, they know that she has been using her restaurant to try and spy on Seth,
mm-hmm.
and it hasn't been working because, of course, they have their informant placed there.
Yeah.
But they're like, look, you've been trying to get into our business for this long, and now because you have this relationship with them, you might know where the diamonds are.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Donna and Taryn have been spying on Seth's compound on Molokai, some huge beachfront castle-y thing. And the thing they learn that's the weak point to Seth's castle is that the Shades dude, who always has a machine gun on him, spends most of his day playing Frisbee with a local townie, just some woman in a bikini who comes running up the beach to play Frisbee with this machine gun guy.
Yeah.
And she does it every day.
Every day, some white woman in a bikini shows up, they play Frisbee, and then she leaves.
Mm-hmm.
And he is into Frisbee.
Frisbee is the only part of this that he cares about.
He's not like, yeah, let's play some Frisbee as foreplay or whatever. He's like, I'm here for the love of the game.
Yeah.
I'm here for the craft.
And it's specifically just to throw a Frisbee back and forth.
Yeah.
In fact, I love it so much that if I'm really into the Frisbee, I'll put my machine gun down.
Now, in order to do this, they have a pair of binoculars and...
Oh, a handheld video camera
the
thing.
The world's best video camera.
There's a point where Donna is watching him through the binoculars, and then the van pulls up, and they unload Edie and the thugs, and she's like, oh my gosh, look at all those, I gotta get a closer look. And she trades Taryn the binoculars for an old handheld video camera.
Hey, how do you zoom in this thing?
Yeah, she's like, give me that camcorder. I want to get a closer look. I'm like, what the fuck kind of camcorder? What? And this is the point where she goes, okay. She gets her zoom in. She goes, Michelle, the waitress at Edie's, is actually one of those thugs, and he's a guy. I can tell because his pinky ring is the same.
Yeah. Great.
And I was like, oh, well, I'm glad they decided to give her some, like, detective skills.
Good job. You're very observant. We're very glad about that.
Quick, let's get to a shower. I do my best detective thinking in the shower.
Let's get into a mud bath. I do my best thinking in the mud bath.
Let's go shop for lingerie.
So, at this point, I think we cut over to the honeymooners that we had not got to for a while, because they're going to be taking pictures in the most surprising scene of this movie, where a guy is taking Polaroid pictures of his lovely, busty wife in mm-hmm. a bikini mm-hmm. with the beautiful Hawaiian background, and she does not take her top off.
I was amazed by this.
I was like, because there's even a point where you put this scene in this movie and didn't have someone take their top off.
I have to assume that woman said no.
They had already hired her and it was too late.
Yeah, like, because even a point where the guy's like, hang on, honey, I've got an idea. And I was like, oh, here it is,
here we go,
here's the part where he has a fun idea. As an aficionado of beach pictures, I was like, oh, I know this next move. All right.
I've been there.
I know
I've got an idea. That's a good move.
Yeah, I know what's up next. But instead,
I'll try that's a good trick.
Yeah, but instead he goes, actually, I'm gonna walk around you on this side so I can get the mountains in the background of the picture. By the way, all the pictures he's taking are terrible because every one of them has his shitty, dirty campsite in it.
Yeah, and the campsite is basically like a blue tarp with two sticks.
A bunch of socks and trash and stuff scattered. Let's stay in the homeless camp.
So he goes to change where he's taking pictures from, and ooh, that hopped up snake shows up and murders the two of them.
Let's go ahead and point out as well that the snake is pretty much always operating at face level.
Yes.
Like, that snake is somehow 6 feet off the ground, and it's never mentioned. It's just a pup. It's just because that's where the puppeteer's hand is.
Well, yeah, because it's going to attack this guy, and instead of like biting his leg or whatever, it goes to face level and attacks him.
Yeah, and this snake also eats chunks of of its prey. It doesn't just swallow people.
No,
because otherwise it would have a dude in it. You know, that'd be a problem for it. It wouldn't be hungry again for a year. But instead, it just sort of tears chunks off its prey.
Well, yeah, because it's all infected.
Hopped up on toxic fluids from cancer-infested rats.
Yeah. Great.
And it just kills both of these people.
We don't get to see them die, but basically, as it attacks the dude, he takes a picture right when it goes, because that'll be important.
Yeah, and then they find both corpses, do Donna and Taryn later on in the film.
Yeah.
This is, in fact, it's pretty much the next scene.
I was going to say, honestly, we can just say that later on they find these two, because at some point they're like, we should check in on those honeymooners just to make sure.
It is somehow their job to do so.
Well, yeah. Also, because I think they're camping somewhat near where Seth's is. So they're
like,
I don't know, let's make sure they're okay.
Yeah, Molokai's not that big. But anyway, yeah, they they find them, and they find a picture that confirms that the snake is alive and a murderer.
Yep, and there's just, like, chunkles of them.
Now, Rowdy and... But because Edie's been kidnapped, Rowdy and Jade have to make their own way to Edie's restaurant, where they ask about her, and Ashley, the weird dude who's the maitre d', informs them that she's not there, and then they just go, okay, well, give us your car keys then.
And the dude, for his part, is like, yeah, okay.
He just goes, yeah, put gas in it.
Yeah.
And they drive off, and this is going to be the point where they finally manage to rendezvous with Taryn and Donna.
Yeah, back at their place.
Yeah, where we get our love scene with Rowdy and Donna, which is the only actual butt shot in the movie.
Yes,
and,
indeed.
And it's hilarious because he keeps making these extremely loud sex noises, but every time we cut to see why, it's like she's at just sort of waist height. She's not doing anything.
No. So it's basically like if he was humping her belly button, mm-hmm. that's what would be going on here.
Yeah, or if she was sucking off the center of his chest.
Yeah.
But anyway, he keeps yelling, and Jade and Taryn, who are not dating and don't hook up or anything, are in the other room and just sort of listening to it. They're like, he's loud. That's funny. They're just supposed to be in there watching a video that you guys took of the beach, but instead they're banging.
Yeah.
My favorite bit here, though, so real, is when Donna goes, hey, could you keep it down? There's two people in the nearby room. He just goes, nah, baby, I'm loud. and she's like, okay.
All right.
I've had that happen.
Nah.
No.
No, I can't.
Don't ask me to do that. What are you, crazy?
What are you kidding? I'm doing this on purpose. I am performative.
This is a code that Jade and I know very well. Watch, he'll have a high five and a beer for me when I come out. I'd do the same for him. Bro code.
It's all part of our DEA code.
It's part of the DEA.
Well, it's in the handbook.
Basically, she's really just there to show him the video of Seth's compound so they can plan their attack.
Yeah.
Because they have to go soon. I mean, after all, they know Edie's been kidnapped and she's being held in there. And also, all throughout all these scenes, we're being shown shots of Seth's henchwoman, who is now dressed in a Mortal Kombat leather bikini strap thing.
God, that scene!
And doing nunchuck stuff. And
she is just like... posing, she's doing bodybuilder poses while being like, I am a fighter.
Nunchuck stuff. And it's just being,
but it's not nunchuck stuff because no one actually does nunchuck stuff.
Yeah, no one does any nunchuck stuff in this movie, but she is posing with nunchucks.
Yeah, she's holding nunchucks,
mm-hmm.
and just sort of posing.
Yeah, and she has her hair in a top knot, and this is just, I guess they just realized that she kind of could wear this outfit and do these poses,
I guess,
and they have her do that.
Yeah.
And Edie's been tied up and is being tortured by everybody else in the gang.
Yeah.
But, you know, we do have time to stay at home, keep putting the same bullets into the same guns, and have sex.
Yes, obviously.
And Jade thinks the whole thing is hilarious. He's like, aha, my buddy's having sex in there. There's never a point where he's like, oh, shit, they have my girlfriend.
Yeah.
It doesn't come up at all.
No, he doesn't care.
He doesn't give a shit.
They know what type of movie they're in. There's no urgency here.
It's an open relationship.
You see, it's open. She's with a whole bunch of other dudes right now. She's kidnapped. Well,
hey, what's your situation? Oh, you're one of Jimmy John Jackson's ladies. I gotcha. Okay.
We forgot the scene with Jimmy John where he does an interview with
the two NFL players.
Two NFL guys that were supposed to be getting like Shirley Temples, but they are drunk during the interview.
Mm-hmm. This is such a weird one-off thing. He's doing a live interview with two NFL guys, and he's like, okay, well, this is the quarterback, and this is the guy he threw the pass to win the big game.
And he does this whole thing. It's like, I think you did a pick, and then you had this guy go wherever. And he's like, what were you doing during that play?
It's not enough. You have to point out that he talks for about 2 minutes.
Oh,
this,
yeah.
This question is one of those, let me read you a whole story and then say, right? And that's the kind of that's my interview style.
Yeah. And so he does every football play term you could squeeze into a thing. And it's like, you had a slant with a pick and you dropped back, but then your receiver went right and then you slanted. And you're like, okay, I get it. I get it.
And finally he goes, what were you thinking? And then the guy just goes like,
in the huddle, I told, hey, black guys go deep. White guys stop the black guys from getting hit.
Yeah, and I think he put a fuck in there at some point. And then the other dude calls his friend the N-word. And he's like, this N-word must be crazy. I'll tell you that much. And this is a live feed. So now, Jimmy, there's no urgency or feeling to this. You have no idea what's going on. But what's supposed to be happening is this is the end of Jimmy John's career.
Yeah. So he's like, thanks, back to you. And then they cut, and everyone's like, oh, shit, what happened? And is the audience, we're like, I don't know, what you tell us.
I don't know. Never set this scene up.
You didn't say it was a live broadcast. But
there's no context or reason for this scene to exist. I don't know what's going on anymore than anyone else.
After a few minutes of sadness, it's like a producer runs out and is like, Jimmy John, we got good news. The satellite feed cut out. He's like, oh, my career might be saved. Yeah, now the suits are telling us they want you to interview this lady golfer.
And he's like, no, she's so dumb, a dumb joke.
She's so dumb that a dumb joke.
Which is the end of that scene.
Ugh, great. Love it.
I don't remember what the dumb joke was. But
I could not tell. I mean, like with most of these types of movies, the sound quality isn't exactly amazing.
No, no.
So
you can't hear boobs, John.
No.
Not unless you're clapping them together.
I'm dummy thick. And the clap from my ass cheeks keeps alerting the guards. Anyway, there's a lot of stuff in this that I think I missed just because the sound quality in this was bad enough I couldn't tell what was being said.
I was at least appreciative that the lady golfer joke was that she's dumb and not that she's gay.
I was going to say that it's not just I don't want to interview a lady because that's bad for my career.
Mm-hmm. But he literally goes, no, she's so dumb that some dumb joke. Like, that's that's the end of that.
Yeah.
And then
we get the assault on Seth's compound.
Which you feel like it should be the end of the movie.
You'd think that.
The plan is pretty impressive. Donna's going to fly in an ultralight and drop noise grenades. Everyone else is going to burst in a Jeep shooting rockets and machine guns at people.
I love this. Because there's a point where, I mean, they sort of go in and they have a back and forth shooting and whatnot. And there's a point where Rowdy takes the rocket launcher into the house and is just running around pointing this rocket launcher like it was a sidearm.
Mm-hmm.
Like just, you know, going around corners, rocket launcher first.
Yep. I think my favorite part is when he gets into a cover shootout with a guy, like some random dude pops out from behind a door and takes a couple shots at him. He's hiding behind the couch and then he ducks around behind the door and Rowdy just shoots the door with a rocket launcher and blows the guy out of the building.
He's like, whatever, fuck it. Yeah, I have a rocket launcher.
We're not doing a cover fight, but there's no point where they're like, wouldn't you be like taking the building down? It's just,
well, the level of explosion in this film for rocket launcher varies highly.
Yeah.
Because one, it explodes a dude into pieces,
mm-hmm.
but then when it hits the guy in the house with, like, hits the door, he just goes flying out the window, and only the door is injured.
Yeah. I think my favorite is when it hits the blow-up doll in the air and explodes into a huge fireball, instead of just going right through it, because that's not enough resistance to set off the missile.
Yeah. Now, in this scene, Seth is going to try and get away in a helicopter, and they'll use the missile launcher on that, which will blow up an entire helicopter.
Oh, he's not in the helicopter. They make a big point about, we have to get Seth, too. But it's the rest of his thugs trying to escape in a helicopter. There's also a scene where Rowdy goes running into a building and gets in a karate fight with a guy, and then Jade comes up and goes, hey, he's mine. And it's supposed to be like, let's watch a karate fight, except that the dude fighting Jade has nothing, has no skill whatsoever. He's just being a bully for like 5 minutes.
No, Jade's just like, hold on, let me clown on this dude.
Yeah.
Because Rowdy and the other guy are like, we're two regular guys that, you know, we can throw a punch, but we don't really know what the fuck we're doing. And we're just kind of lazily slapping each other. But like, that's how Rowdy gets the rocket launcher. Jade's like, here, have a rocket launcher. I'm going to punch this dude to death.
Yeah, just gets into a karate fight with him where the dude has no karate.
And he's just going to clown on this fool. And then he gets tiger claws out.
Yeah, and he also gives the other guy enough time to run away and get a knife so they can have a little weapon fight.
There's a scene in this where, again, a dude gets beaten up with nunchucks that do not get extended. Just grabbing both ends of the nunchuck and hitting him with it like a club.
Yeah, no one ever swings the chucks like in a chuck fashion. There's no Michelangeloing in this. And there's two scenes in the movie where that happens. But yeah, so Rowdy just or sorry, Jay just punishes this guy for several minutes and then tears his throat out with tiger claws. He's like, and you're dead. And then he runs off to find Edie, who's still tied to the ceiling and all scared. And he unties her just enough. This is, by the way, the fourth best line in the movie. He comes up to Edie, yep. Sees where she's at, and says, you're tied up. Kinky sex.
God damn it. I'll go get the midgets and leather. Thanks, Jade.
That's the full line.
What you want to do when you find your tortured, kidnapped girlfriend is to immediately go, kinky sex.
Yeah. Kinky sex. What? Why did you just say that? What the fuck is wrong with you?
You're on WBBB with Kinky Sex and the Fuck Doctor.
Kinky Sex and the Fuck Doctor is a pretty solid replacement for
Elk Piss and the Butt Man.
Elk Man and Butt Piss. So, anyway, he just unties her exactly enough to be able to make out with her.
Yeah, right.
And now they're making out. And then everybody escapes. And as they're escaping, the people try to get in the helicopter to escape and are laying down covering fire. But Donna shoots a rocket at the helicopter and blows up all the thugs but Seth.
They escape in a van.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like halfway home by the time they realize, hey, wait a minute, what about Seth?
Man, we never found Seth.
And then Rowdy just has a motorcycle and goes flying out the back of the van.
Mm-hmm. He just jumps the back of the van and rides away. And then we don't see him again until a climactic moment a little later on. We cut to Donna at home, alone, just not showering or anything. This isn't a boob moment.
No, she's just sitting in front of a mirror, like, doing makeup or whatever.
Actually, I think the movie's boob moments are over now.
There's never an end to the boob moments.
Yeah. Anyway, she's at home doing makeup or something, and then Seth comes in. Now, Seth's pretty beat up at this point. He's been shot at. He's got a knife cut on his face, or got a bullet in his hole in his face. He has knife wounds. He's not in good shape. But he comes in and he attacks her looking for the diamonds. And she manages to kick him free, get away from him, and hide in her closet. Now, he pulls a big knife and starts trying to stab her closet open.
In the worst fashion possible. This is one of those closet doors that's just like the slats.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of, like, just punching it open or shouldering it or kicking it or anything, he is using his tiny baby knife to stab at the slats.
I mean, it's also pretty lucky that this is a closet that has a lock on the inside of the door handle.
I mean, there is that.
That's a very lucky closet to own.
Yeah.
But he stabs his way through these slats and giving her ample time to assemble a spear gun and spear gun him.
Yeah. As soon as he does the, like, break the slats and then unlock the door and open it, he gets shot in the chest. Like, sort of the shoulder area.
With a spear gun.
And he goes tumbling back and down, but he's not out.
No, he gets back up. This is going to be a knockdown and think he's dead three times thing. Once with a spear gun, once just pushing his spear gun wound, and then the third time making him stab himself in the stomach with a big knife.
Yeah.
Then, finally, he gets up a fourth time.
But now, after the third time of him falling down, Donna is, of course, distressed.
And she's very wounded.
Runs into another room, and this room happens to just be the bathroom, and she sits down right next to the toilet.
Yeah, she's hiding in the tub at the moment.
Now, you may have forgotten this, but up from the toilet, 30 stories tall, comes the goddamn snake puppet explodes the toilet.
The entire toilet explodes. Also, there's a blue spotlight in there.
Like,
there's like he's being announced at Branson, Missouri.
I mean, he just comes out with the world's most amazing entrance, exploding a toilet as light shines upon his glorious hand puppet.
And shouts out and shines out from where he is. And there's smoke effects too. Oh. I mean, this is a wrestler entrance that the snake gets.
Oh yeah. Like, as soon as he explodes that toilet, someone's just like, oh my god, that's Stone Cold's music!
And also a big snake! Stone Cold won't be happy! That's Jake Roberts' music! Jake the Snake Roberts' music. Man, has a wrestler ever shown up to someone else's wrestler music just to piss the original wrestler off?
Oh, well, my god, that's The Rock's music, but wait a minute, that's The Undertaker, what the fuck is going on?
He just comes out, like, just flipping off the crowd. You thought I was gonna be The Rock.
You thought cool things were happening, but no.
Oh my God, if I was ever a professional wrestler, that would be my gimmick.
If I was a low end,
low card,
nobody cared about me, I would definitely be like, no, at one point you have to take like a beloved wrestler, like give me Stone Cold or The Rock or someone who doesn't wrestle anymore, mm-hmm. but people would love to see.
Yeah.
Play that music, and then I'm going to come out and just be like,
yeah, I'm going to flip you all the bird. You thought something good was going to happen, but I'm just some jobber.
But it's me. I don't even get a cool name. It's just like my name.
It's like, John Taylor.
John Taylor. Oh, no.
Oh, we used your last name. We don't usually do that.
No, who cares? Do you know how many John Taylors there are in the U.S.?
I know. There's a lot.
Or in San Diego alone.
Yeah, but now you're going to get a lot of those John Taylor Thomas jokes. They're a coming.
They're coming hard.
Yeah. But that
anyway.
That is the best wrestling gimmick ever, by the way. Just don't know wrestlers out there steal our gimmick. We thought of that.
That's us. So the snake explodes the toilet, and she, reasonably freaks out.
Yeah, runs away and hides behind a bed. Now, finally, Seth, once again, just a zombie of a man, completely covered in wounds and spears and stuff, stands up.
Now, he did not see Donna run out and jump behind a bed. He just thinks she is in the bathroom because the door is closed, and he can hear things happening in there. Because mm-hmm. the snake is just like pushing makeup off the counter and stuff like that.
Exploding more stuff, you know, just...
just exploding things.
Yeah.
And so he walks and opens the door and gets bit on the face by the world's dumbest looking hand puppet.
And then he promptly dies because, you know, that thing is very poisonous. It's contaminated with toxins from cancer-infested rats. I mean, what else is going to happen?
And at this point, like the Kool-Aid man,
mm-hmm.
Rowdy runs a motorcycle through the wall
mm-hmm.
and is like, ha ha, I'm here. And I'm like, my dude, you are a little late.
And also, who called you? How did you know to ride through her wall? Was this just a sex thing? Was this planned?
Also, if you had, instead of riding your motorcycle out the back of a van like an idiot, just stayed in the van and went to Donna's, you would have been there for this whole thing.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So he rides in on a motorcycle, jumps off the motorcycle. Donna's like, watch out, the snake's here. And he responds by rocket launching the snake's face off.
Well, first Donna shoots the snake, and he apparently has a metal face.
Yeah, she just knocks one of his teeth out.
Yeah, you can see a bullet like hits his tooth, and it just sparks and ricochets. And you're like, okie dokie.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he gets hit by the rocket launcher, and this doesn't just blow up the snake. It just blows up the snake's head.
Yeah, and there's no huge explosion. The snake's head just sort of pops.
Yeah.
And then its corpse falls to the ground. And that's...
So there's a lot of variation in the level of destructive capacity in this rocket launcher.
I mean, you know, that's all boils down to the rocket. Maybe they're very carefully picking what type of rocket to load in for each shot.
Oh, but yeah.
This was the anti-snake rocket.
I've got my anti-snake rocket. Just in case.
Oh, shit, that's Stone Cold's music. And it's John with an anti-snake rocket. That can't be a legal use of outside items.
Well, it's a no DQ match, so anything goes. He has blown up the audience.
All of their snakes are gone. What a horrible day for it to have been Free Snake Day.
And then from then, I'll be known as St. Patrick.
Because
I got rid of all the snakes.
Yeah, all the snakes in the El Paso.
I blew up all the snakes in Ireland.
All the snakes in the El Paso Lyceum Theater. Well, there you have it. That's and then he blows up the snake. Now, at this point, you probably think this movie's over. We've had a huge triumphant raid on the compound. We've had a huge battle between her and the final boss. And then
we finally wrapped up the weird, dumb C-plot of a snake being loose.
Yeah, but unfortunately, the D-plot of nunchucks being used incorrectly must have an ending as well.
Well, they're like, hey, you guys remember that one brief scene where Mr. Chang was in it, the guy who actually sent those diamonds?
No, none of the main characters were involved in that scene, or the second scene where he complained over the phone.
And in fact, no one's mentioned a Mr. Chang until this point, but then of course, like, Rowdy and Jade are like, ooh, the one behind this all is Mr. Chang.
We have to go get him.
He's half British, half Chinese.
He grew up at equal parts in Hong Kong and London. He's super dangerous with edged weapons, and he has a bodyguard, a psycho killer who looks exactly like a juiced up Mike from Mystery Science Theater.
And he's deadly and sophisticated as Mr. Chang.
There's all this talk about Mr. Chang, but it's between the six people who take a limo to Mr. Chang's building in Honolulu, because all three of the couples are together. They brought Jimmy Jack along.
They brought Jimmy Jack and Edie, which are like, but neither of you are, you know what? Fine, whatever.
Whatever. You're all here. But the people who are actually going to go up to raid Mr. Chang's office is just Rowdy and Donna.
Yeah. Like, even though they brought two other people that ostensibly could go, they're still just like, nah, it's just going to be us.
Now, they go up to the 10th floor or whatever where Mr. Chang is hiding out. Mr. Chang sits in front of a big wall of weapons, and he has this big Mike-looking bodyguard. They walk in. The bodyguard gets up. He's like, what are you doing here? And they beat him to death with nunchucks.
Yes, indeed.
He never even fights back even a little bit.
Yeah, they spent time saying that this dude is a crazed killer and he's super fucked up and dangerous, this bodyguard.
He's a deadly murderer and his bodyguard job gives him ample time to sate his bloodlust.
Then he just gets clowned on by nunchucks that are used improperly.
Mm-hmm. Just gets beat up with nunchucks like a club and eventually dies on the floor. Chang responds by pulling a katana from the wall and they're like,
you brought a sword to a gunfight.
And he responds with, yeah, and throws the katana at them.
Yeah, doesn't even try and swing it, just throws it.
And when we say throw, what I mean is he tries to like dart throw it. Like he just tries to push it from the back.
Oh yeah. He's like underhand throwing this katana at them.
It's back when we were in water polo, that was what we called a screw shot. Was you'd hold the ball up with one hand and just push it real fast with the ball with the other hand from the back. You can't do it with a bladed weapon. But anyway, there's also a quick joke here where Rowdy pulls his gun, and then Donna pulls a way bigger gun.
Yeah, he's got a little pistol, but she's got, like, a fucking Magnum.
A big fucking hand cannon. And he has to look at it and go, oh, now you got a bigger gun than me. We're gonna hash this out later with your boobs. Not by, you know, doing anything disrespectful with them or whatever. Just by you showing them to me and me going, hey, all
right.
Good
job.
Those are great. Well, they shoot him, and they knock him out of the building.
Yeah, he goes flying out the window and slams into the ground below, and the katana has embedded itself into the wall between the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they didn't move. So that means not only was his big plan to throw a katana, but he can throw it hard enough to get into a wall, but he's not very good at doing it.
No. And we're done. All these DEA agents and like their random friends have murdered their way across Hawaii. No paperwork necessary.
Indeed.
We have a party on the deck of the Malibu Express, their boat they have, where all six of them are sitting around. And they're like, okay, nothing left to do but go back to Molokai and retrieve that other box of diamonds.
We're going to have to give that back to the agency because, you know, that's what we do. Any goods that we recover has to go to the agency.
And Taryn's like, well, I'm not a member of the agency.
And I'm the only one who knows where they are.
So I can get them and sell them and then share my good fortune with my friends. And they're all like, we sure can, wine clink. And that's the end. Their end is, okay, not only are we clearly not DEA agents because we've never reported to anyone and our only instructions came via sandwich, but and our only job appears to be ferrying tourists around Molokai.
Yeah, we are basically just murderers that have a moonlighting project as like freight and people delivery.
Yeah, they're just murderers. And at the end of the movie, they're just like, yeah, and we'll all be rich murderers too, even though we're clearly already rich.
We're going to take all this drug money diamonds and be richer than we are.
Mm-hmm. And then Hard Ticket to Hawaii plays again, and we're done.
And that's the movie.
And we get a couple of blooper reel shots, but all the blooper reel shots are just everyone's boobs again.
Yeah, it's just, you remember when this happened in the movie? Boobs.
Yeah. Poor Edie has the exact same scene of her getting undressed in her apartment and looking at the camera, just in the exact same, just the same shot again.
Just this steely gaze of looking at the camera and taking your top off.
Well, there you have it. That's Hard Ticket to Hawaii.
So let's go ahead and do our little bit here, the best and worst of the movie. Jeff, is it the tits?
No.
What's the best thing in this movie
for
you?
I mean, as much as I appreciate the tit movie as a genre.
Yeah. So is it just genre is the best thing for
you? No, because this movie has a whole bunch of other things to it that are fantastic. The best thing in this movie is the scene where they blow up a sex doll and a skateboarder with a rocket launcher.
I mean, when you're right, you're right.
Yeah, there's no getting around it. The tit movies come and go, John, but blowing up a skateboarder with a rocket launcher is forever.
Yeah. I mean, I want to say that scene
In its entirety?
In its entirety is amazing. Because if you want to take them using the rocket launcher to blow up a sex doll, that's amazing. For me, the fact that their plan was to skateboard past them, drive past them again, and then skateboard back again as the plan is what I love.
From the basically the best thing in this movie is starts it, that guy must be smoking some heavy doobies, and ends it, a blow-up doll is blown up with a rocket launcher.
Yeah.
It's unimpeachable.
Like, start to finish, that scene is one of the best weird, nonsensical scenes where no one bothers to mention how ridiculous everything is in this.
Yeah, that's the other thing about that scene that makes it amazing is everybody on it is just on board. Like, when they're done murdering the guy and his blow-up doll, the other thug just vanishes.
Yeah, he just drove off.
He just drives off. And the two guys, there's no point where they're like, that's weird, a skateboard-based rifle assassin with a blow-up doll. That, you don't see that every day, and it's even rarer on the island of Molokai.
Nope, they were just like, oh yeah, that's standard fare.
Standard heavy doobies.
That's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, that scene is unimpeachable. I mean, there are better, you know, titty movies out there. This isn't an amazing titty movie. It's an amazing what the fuck movie.
Yeah.
And for you, John, the best thing?
Oh, I said that was it.
Oh, we're just in full agreement.
Yeah. No, you can take that. I'm taking the fact that their plan was to have him be a skateboard assassin instead of both of them shooting at them from a truck.
I mean, during the credits, they show that skateboard guy doing some more skateboard tricks, and they're just like, yeah, we had
a dude who knew how to skateboard. Obviously, we used it.
Yeah. I mean, they were using every part of the buffalo in this movie.
Yeah. So, worst
every
part
inch of
this
the areolas.
Movie.
The worst part of this movie, I'm going to say Jimmy John Jackson. All of his scenes are terrible.
That is true.
Yeah. The scene where he's explaining vitamins is bad. The love scene he gets is boring. And then the scene where he talks to the NFL people makes no sense.
Yep.
He really feels like he was just there because someone needed to be in the Taryn shows her boobs scene.
Yeah. Because they were like, oh, wait a minute. We already decided that these two idiots were going to be with these other two idiots. Who do we get for Taryn?
Yeah. Yeah, we need one more vaguely attractive, dopey-looking dude.
Yeah.
And he needs some business because she can't just have a love scene with a random guy.
Yeah.
That's porn.
Yeah, no. It has to be someone that's established in some way in this movie.
Or else it's porn.
Ugh.
So there you have it. That's Jimmy Jack Johnson is far and away the worst, weirdest thing. What about you? What's your least favorite?
I got to say my least favorite thing in this.
I mean, you can also go with the cross-dressing for no reason.
I mean, at least there wasn't any sort of like real.
There was no
like
attack
gay
on the guy
panic
for it. Yeah,
or
there was
anything
no,
about this.
There was no point where they called him anything. There was no slur.
No one was like, "Oh my god, what a pervert." They were just like, "Oh,
it's a guy.
Oh, you fooled us."
Yeah. So you know what? Maybe I gotta actually. I'm not gonna say it's the best, but it actually is well handled for a movie of this caliber.
Yeah. It is oddly weird that I'm gonna say my least favorite thing is the two dudes doing horrible Asian stereotype shit on a boat while they kung fu fight each other.
Yeah, Rowdy and Jade. So both our favorite and least favorite things are Rowdy and Jade stuff. We're leaving the poor women who are the stars of this movie completely out of it.
Oh yeah,
they did a good, competent job.
They barely get any business in this.
That's true. I mean, there's
honest.
A part where Taryn apparently spends too much of her money on spy posters.
Yeah,
spy movie posters.
It's like, oh, you got another spy movie poster, and in the background is a spy movie poster from some other movie that she is in.
That Donna's in. It's presumably another Andy Sedaris movie because that's the director of this.
Yeah.
So the racism on a boat.
There you go. And now we'll give it each a rating 0 to 5. Gives this rating a rating out of 10. Jeff,
I'm torn between 2.5 and 3. I think I'll stick to 2.5. This movie is exceedingly weird, but there's so much weird nonsense in it that it is kind of worth checking out the weird nonsense.
Okay.
Like, you don't, it's not the kind of movie that you should sit around and watch with all of your dude friends, which was a mistake I made when we were.
Yeah, you're like, hey, come watch this, my dude friend.
Come on, Brian, let's sit down and watch this. And he was like, no. Because he was only there in the early parts, which is mostly just boob setup.
Yeah.
He missed the heavy doobies.
Yeah.
I think if he had stuck around long enough for the heavy doobies, he would have been in for the whole ride.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm going to say a 2.5, John. There's enough weirdness to elevate it beyond the standard super schlock fare we've watched before.
All right.
Especially the puppet snake. I mean,
oh, puppet
the snake. Puppet snake is completely worth sticking around to see. What about you?
I'm going to give it a 2.
Mm-hmm.
As weird as some of the nonsense that happens in this is, it definitely suffers from the, like, shitty director doesn't know how to pace things, and you just get moments where things take too long, or
the soul food scene is an endless slog.
Well, you also get stuff where it's like, what is this? What should be an establishing shot is like a minute and a half of panning across the environment.
Oh yeah, or scenes where the women are walking towards camera and they just stay on them, and it's not like they're wearing any, they're doing anything sexy or worthy.
No.
It's just sort of, oh, we needed an extra couple of seconds, and so just hold.
What should have been an establishing shot gets turned into part of the scene for no reason.
Yeah, that's definitely true. There's some bad filmmaking here.
Yeah. So I'm going to give it a 2. That'll give us a 4.5 out of 10. Not that bad for Hard Ticket to Hawaii.
I've seen worse movies in each one of the genres that this thing is.
Yeah.
And it's...
I mean, this is no Laser Mission, so...
No, there's no way this is a Laser Mission. Although, both the women are better than the woman in Laser Mission.
It's true.
The woman in Laser Mission is awful. She's basically in the Willie Scott genre.
I will say this, at least... The two of them, like, Donna is, like, actually tough and competent and fights off the main villain.
Mm-hmm.
And Taryn...
learns by the end.
Isn't an idiot. Like, she's that bubbly, fun type character, but isn't like, also, I'm dumb, here's my boobs.
Yeah, both of them are... I mean, she's not super competent, but that's just because she's not a trained DEA agent.
Yeah, she's like, I don't know why I'm here. I'm just following you around.
But she certainly... She accounts herself very well in this film. I was surprised.
For being thrust into this situation, she definitely murders several people.
Mm-hmm.
So there
she gets
go.
To murder that football or that kung fu lady. It's barely even in the movie, but she does get to murder the kung fu lady who was doing the bodybuilder poses
and the Michael Michelle.
Yeah, she also takes out our Michael Michelle character.
There you go.
Yeah, crazy film.
So thank you so much for joining us for another episode of Movie Mastery. We will be back in 2 weeks with more of this. We do have our in theaters now for March poll up. It's been up for a bit, but we don't have a ton of votes on there. So if you want to decide what it is we are going to go see this month in theaters, go to systemmasterypodcast.com, go to the Movie Mastery tab and click on In Theaters Now. It'll take you to our poll and you can vote on what you want us to see.
Maybe we should start doing those polls in like Twitter or the Discord so that they're more accessible to people than our ancient ass website.
Nah.
Eh, fair enough.
I want people to go to the website.
Fair enough.
So you can go there, and of course on our website you can find all of our other content as well.
Mm-hmm.
You can find all of our content and support the show if you go to patreon.com/systemmastery. You can give it any level and help out the show. It helps us do what we do, keeps the show on the air, and it opens up some bonus content for you for our other shows. And at the $5 level, even gets you our monthly afterthought where... the two of us really just shoot the shit. We get into some topics.
A selling
point. Oh, it's great. Yeah. I mean, if you love our banter, this is just banter with a couple topics. We do questions from the audience.
Questions from you.
And if you want to get answers for any of your questions.
There you go.
then you can join us at the $5 level or more. And that unlocks our special Discord for Afterthought level people only.
Mm-hmm.
You can find that on our Twitter. We're at System Mastery. You can find the Discord.
Yeah, we have a pinned link there. It's really easy to get to. I know you've got money to support our Patreon people. I saw that Critical Role thing.
I saw what Critical Role got. You people got walking around money.
You got pocket change. Hook us up.
But yeah, you can go there and ask us questions. Get probably one of our most... beloved shows.
It's the one we have the most fun making.
Oh yeah. I mean, when I say one of our most beloved, I don't mean by the audience, I mean by us.
Yeah, it's our favorite show. So that's why we charge more for it, because it's a labor of love.
Yeah. And we have to actually like put an effort to the intro and
kinda, yeah.
It's the only thing we put effort into.
It's true. People are always asking me how much time we spend like script writing and running lines and so on, and I'm like, what?
What?
Every time I talk to other podcasts, even if they're like way less successful than we are, everything they say to me makes us feel like we're just bumbling dopes.
They're like, well, how many pages of notes do you take before you start recording?
I'm like, we have never taken any notes ever. And they're like, that's weird, because my producer was saying that we should probably, and I was like, a producer?
You have a producer?
How are we not on the same track as every other podcast? Like, we didn't start on a HeadGum network somehow.
Yeah, I'm like, how do you have a producer? You make $30 on Patreon.
Is every single other person making a podcast related to a McElroy and we just didn't notice?
Did we stumble onto, like, a secret cabal of podcasters?
Every single time. Even when the people are like, I'm thinking of starting a podcast, and my producer says, and I'm like, what? God, what are they taking from you? 10% of nothing?
Well, you see, our creative director really thinks. I'm like, whoa, hold the fuck up.
The marketing team thinks that what we should... and I'm like, there's two of us. We record in a bedroom. We do no work.
We're so awful.
Yeah.
Anyway, thanks
for listening.
Thanks for listening to our awful, shitty show. We will see you in 2 weeks with more Movie Mastery. But until such a time, you have a good one. It's a hard ticket. Oh,